Hello there and welcome. Today is Tuesday, July 26, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. The Democratic Convention starts with high drama and intrigue involving Russian hackers.
This Russian government has a very strange relationship to Donald Trump.
Democrats bring out the big guns, though, to make the case for Hillary. U.S. women are more likely than men to live in poverty in their elder years. Problems continue to plague the Rio Olympics. And also ahead, a sci-fi horror, a drama. We are going to the movies. It's all on today's International Edition. Well, the Democratic Party has opened its four-day national convention in the eastern city of Philadelphia with a rousing ending as Clinton's former rival Bernie Sanders took to the stage. Let's go live now to the convention floor where we find VOA congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson. I know it's loud there. You are amid the thousands. Can you hear us okay?
I can hear you okay, Lori. We actually just got out. Bernie's speech just ended. And so filing out of the convention center after a very exciting day here at the first day of the Democratic National Convention.
Did Sanders make the case to his diehard supporters to get on board with Hillary?
Well, you know, it was a big job today. When I was at the convention when they gaveled in this afternoon, it did not look good. We had a lot of people booing the idea of Hillary Clinton as president. And as the day progressed, as we had the speeches build up to the big moment when Bernie came out, they really found a way to bring everybody together and unite everyone to battle Donald Trump in the general election in November.
Yeah, it started off a little rough earlier, but it looks like at first it looked like Sanders supporters weren't going to go quietly. Do you think that he changed any hearts and minds?
Yeah, I think Bernie found a way today to unite everyone and bring them along, let them know about the real stakes in this election. I think, of course, there will always be the outliers who will be disappointed about losing these very tough contests. But overall, the mood in the room was joyful, energetic, and motivated in fighting Donald Trump in the fall.
And lastly, before we let you go, Elizabeth Warren, she really came out as a Donald Trump attack dog.
Oh, yes, that's absolutely right. She had some lines that got a big reaction from the crowd. They were all primed and ready, waiting for Bernie to speak. And so they were just loving what she was talking about in terms of Donald Trump and why he's not fit for the presidency.
VOA's Catherine Gibson live at the Democratic National Convention in Philadelphia. We appreciate it. We know you're working hard there, so thanks for your time.
Always good to talk to you, Lori.
You got it. All right. Well, when the convention started today, first of all, actually, before we get to that, let's just hear a little bit of what Bernie Sanders did have to say.
Based on her ideas and her leadership, Hillary Clinton must become the next president of the United States.
Certainly he would have you wouldn't have expected that earlier today. There was fresh controversy when the convention started over a WikiLeaks disclosure of nearly 20,000 leaked emails that show Democratic Party leaders tried to ease Hillary Clinton's path to the nomination by mocking her challenger, Bernie Sanders. Now, as it got underway, the DNC issued a statement apologizing to Sanders and his supporters, and DNC chairwoman Debbie Wasserman Schultz actually stepped down. Now, early on, Clinton campaign manager Robbie Mook said that unlike the dark and fearful picture painted by the Republican convention last week, this one will be filled with hope.
Our convention is going to be optimistic. It is going to be hopeful. And it is going to talk about specific plans that the secretary has to get this economy working for everyone, not just those at the top, to bring our country together and to keep us more secure.
And one by one, celebrities like Demi Lovato, Al Franken, Sarah Silverman, and Eva Longoria made their case.
I'm proud to support a presidential candidate who will fight to ensure all people living with mental health conditions get the care they need to lead fulfilling lives.
I think rather than voting for someone who's never done anything for anyone other than himself, maybe we should go with a candidate who spent her entire life working to get important things done for the American people.
Hillary heard the passion of the people behind Bernie, and brought those passions into the party's platform. And that is the process of democracy at its very best. And it's very cool to see. Hillary is our Democratic nominee, and I will proudly vote for her.
You know, I believe in the candidate who believes in all of us, and that candidate is Hillary Clinton.
Well, one of the biggest moments also came when the very popular First Lady of the United States, Michelle Obama, spoke to how this election will shape the lives of future generations.
What I admire most about Hillary is that she never buckles under pressure. She never takes the easy way out. And Hillary Clinton has never quit on anything in her life.
Well, meanwhile, the FBI says it's probing that WikiLeaks release of DNC emails. We've got more now from Jeremy Mayer, an associate professor of the School of Policy, Government and International Affairs at George Mason University. What do you make of this?
There is not proof that I have seen, proof that would stand up in court or would allow us to have confidence that it actually happened. What we have is a great deal of circumstantial evidence. We do know the DNC was hacked. There's reason to believe from experts in cyber hacking that it was the Russian government or people affiliated with the Russian government. We know the Russians are very active in information warfare right now and cyber warfare. And we also know that this Russian government has a very strange relationship to Donald Trump.
Donald Trump has complimented Mr. Putin. He basically said he's more of a leader than President Obama. And then, of course, Mr. Putin pretty much returned the favor, praising Mr. Trump. So it would seem there's somewhat of a bromance going on there.
And it's even more than just these words of flippant praise that can be sort of laughed off. Donald Trump has altered the platform of the Republican Party in ways that are sending traditional Republican foreign policy analysts into a tizzy. He basically abandoned the Ukraine. And the fact that several of his top advisors, and remember, this is a man with very few advisors, have been on the payroll of Russian-affiliated government sources is somewhat alarming.
Right, that would be Mr. Manafort.
And he's not the only one.
Oh, really?
But yeah, there's another guy who's also on the foreign policy advisor list who has strong ties to the Russians. So if it was just that there were people with strong ties, hey, you know, that happened. But the fact that there are people with strong ties and they made a revolutionary change in the Republican platform and have a attitude towards Russia that contrasts so sharply with McCain and with Romney, the two most recent Republican nominees. Romney was saying that Obama isn't taking Russia seriously enough. Trump is saying we need to be friendlier with Russia. That's a dramatic shift.
Do we at least know that Russian intelligence could have been behind the break-in of the Democratic National Committee's email servers?
We know that the cyber experts, of which you're not interviewing one, a lot of the top people have said, yeah, this has Russian fingerprints all over it. There are ways of getting degrees of certainty about this. Now, it is possible that this email leak on WikiLeaks was another hack that we haven't discovered. But circumstantially, the fact that there was a widely known to be Russian hack a few months before WikiLeaks put these documents up at a moment of maximum disruption for the Democratic Party, it is looking like this is a Russian attempt to affect an American election. And what I keep thinking about is, what if this had happened in 1984? What if Walter Mondale, the Democratic nominee, had strong links to the Soviet Union and had advisors who'd been on the payroll of the Soviets, and then altered the Democratic Party platform to strongly favor the Soviets. And just then, there was a leak of documents associated with Russian intelligence that hurt Ronald Reagan. People would have been talking about the Manchurian candidate. I mean, it would have been, looked like a national security crisis of the highest proportions. Now, that was during the Cold War, but it is extraordinary that we're talking about something like this.
Proving the source of a cyber attack can be pretty difficult, though. Is that not true?
It is very true. There are some people who say it was Romanian. Some people say that was just a front. But even before these documents were leaked, independent, objective cyber experts saying, no, that looks like a Russian intrusion.
There was even a headline on Bloomberg that said, would Trump make Russia great again?
And I think that this fits into a pattern with Trump. He's spoken many times of his admiration for strong authoritarian governments, whether it's the way China cracked down on its demonstrators in 89 or Putin, or even Saddam Hussein has earned some Trumpian praise. So this fits a rather disturbing pattern.
All right. We appreciate it. Jeremy Mayer, an associate professor at George Mason University, on suspicions that Russia could have been behind the leak of Democratic National Committee emails. Earlier, though, I talked about the reactions on social media to the DNC email hacking situation with VOA's G. Abby Lee. Hi, G.
Hi, Lori. Before the convention kicked off Monday, Bernie Sanders addressed a group of his delegates. A video clip of his speech has been one of the trending topics on Facebook this afternoon. He urged his supporters to vote for Hillary Clinton and said GOP nominee Donald Trump is a demagogue. In the video, he was heavily booed by his supporters. Sanders' team shared the clip on Facebook and captioned it, "Thank you to all of the delegates representing our revolution in Philadelphia. #DemsInPhilly." One of the most liked comments reads like this: "We need you, Bernie. You. Only you can unite the country. Don't stand down." More than 2,000 people liked the comment in less than 3 hours.
Wow, what about on Twitter, G?
He addressed a WikiLeaks scandal that was released over the weekend. Now, this is the most popular tweet he sent out on the issue. "The party leadership must always remain impartial in the presidential nominating process, something which did not occur in the 2016 race. Nearly 25,000 people liked it. But if you think that number is high, check out this tweet by Donald Trump. He tweeted, "Wow, the Republican convention went so smoothly compared to the Dems' total mess. But fear not, the dishonest media will find a good spin." Nearly 30,000 people liked it.
So what about the people from the outside of the political realm? What are they saying?
The filmmaker Michael Moore had a lot to say. He wrote a blog post on his website and predicted Trump to win the election. And of course, a liberal filmmaker prefaced it with, "I hope I am wrong." In the blog post, he gave 5 reasons as to how he came to that conclusion. That's all for me today. Back to you.
All right. Thanks so much, G. You can follow her at G. Abby Lee. We also invite you to follow the International Edition stream at VOA_IE. Here are some of the stories we're following at voanews.com. 19 people are dead in a knife attack in Japan, and a suspect has confessed. Turkey aims a new crackdown at journalists and academics. A security exercise causes a bomb scare at the U.S. Embassy in Rangoon. A California wildfire grows as more residents are evacuated. And Verizon to buy internet pioneer Yahoo. Find expanded coverage of these stories and much more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. The International Olympic Committee has decided against banning all Russian teams from competing in next month's Olympic Games over allegations of an elaborate doping scheme. Ed Hula is the editor of AroundTheRings.com.
It is the IOC trying to walk a fine line between sanctioning everybody, keeping out Russia from Rio, which would be a very drastic, difficult situation for the IOC, or figuring out a way to allow one-by-one athletes to be able to go to Rio and compete. What they have created is a very complicated, difficult-to-implement procedure here that requires the 300-and-something Russian athletes who are supposed to compete in Rio. They're going to have to prove themselves worthy from the drugs point of view, from the doping point of view, in order to be competing in Rio. And they've only got a little more than a week to get this all done.
But he says there are other problems besides doping. Australia's team says it can't stay in Olympic Village because it's not safe or sanitary.
Exposed wiring, leaking plumbing, toilets that won't flush, other unfinished business in the Olympic Village that's supposed to be ready for occupancy today. It just doesn't stop for Rio. They pledge that they'll have everything fixed by the time all the athletes roll into town. But it's just another indication of the difficulty, the challenges that they face, and anybody faces putting on the Olympic Games, whether it's in Rio de Janeiro or London, England.
Well, this year's Olympics will be held in Rio, and starting August 5th, VOA will have complete coverage. In a move seen as intended to ease political tensions, Turkey's president met with the political opposition on Monday. But as Dorian Jones reports from Istanbul, concerns continue to grow that a crackdown on plotters of the failed coup earlier this month is extending to critics of the president.
Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan hosted Nationalist Action Party leader Devlet Bahçeli and Kemal Kılıçdaroğlu, the head of the main opposition Republican People's Party. The nearly three-hour gathering comes amid growing concerns over the crackdown since the July 15th coup attempt. Semih Idiz, a columnist for Turkey's Cumhuriyet newspaper, says with all the opposition parties opposing the coup, the president was obliged to hold the meeting.
We are in Turkey in a situation where nerves are on edge, and the lead-up to this coup, we witnessed very many harsh exchanges between the ruling elite and the opposition.
In a short statement, the CHP described the meeting as positive. Dorian Jones, VOA News, Istanbul.
Observers, meanwhile, warn that the scope of arrests appear to be broadening, and time could be running out for building a cross-party consensus and threat to further turmoil. You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
Starting July 18th, VOA's team of correspondents, analysts, and online journalists will provide extensive coverage of the Republican and Democratic Party's political conventions. It's where delegates officially choose their presidential nominees ahead of national elections. So tune in and stay informed with VOA's coverage of this critical part of the U.S. presidential election right here on VOA.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, and on my program Jazz America, I carry on the tradition begun decades ago by the great Willis Conover by exploring the wonders of a century of jazz history. I'll cover it all from Dixieland to swing to bebop to modal, free jazz, fusion, world jazz, contemporary, and beyond. Plus, you'll hear the words of the artists themselves as they tell their incredible stories. Join me for Jazz America, Saturdays and Sundays at 13 hours Universal Time, online at voanews.com and the Voice of America.
This is International Edition here on VOA. A horror, a space age, and a drama. We've got reviews on the hottest new movies in theaters now. But first, a recent study from the nonprofit American organization, the National Institute on Retirement Security, has found that women are much more likely than men to face poverty during their senior years. Here to talk more about it, the organization's executive director, Diane Oakley. Thanks so much for being here, Diane. Tell us about what your study found.
What we found, first off, is that when we look at the household income for women using data from federal government data sets that have at that age,
it could really be worrisome that many could be much more likely to be living in poverty.
Exactly. What happens is because the women getting less income than men when they retire, overall, when we look at women who fall into, you know, the poverty levels and compare men and women, women are 80% more likely to be impoverished than men. And the poverty rate for women increases with age, changes in marital status, and across ethnic backgrounds.
So it doesn't really matter what ethnicity these women are?
Well, especially minority women of color are particularly affected by poverty, more so than men in the same category.
What's the percentage when you compare men to women as far as their retirement years and the chances of them living below what they're capable of supporting themselves on?
Well, I mean, generally what we know is that, you know, women live longer than men, and that's part of the issue. As they age, a man who is between ages 65 and 69, they get just about $60,000 of total income. This is for someone at the median of the income distribution. A woman 65 to 59 gets about $48,000. But when you look at what happens as they age, women 80 and over only earn about $26,000 of household income, where men at that age have $38,000. And so women are tending to fall below the level needed to sustain them without either working or other income, like special welfare types of programs, so some type of assistance. So we see that very clearly. And then when we look at by poverty levels, a woman over age 80, 11% of them are in poverty, but males over age 80, only 6% of them are in poverty. And, you know, the most disparate difference really occurs between women 75 to 79, where women are three times more likely to be poor than men are in that age category. The poverty rate for women who are widowed compared to men who are widowed is, again, more than twice what it would be for men, where men fall into poverty if they're widowed at about 6% of all the retirees over age 65, but 13% of women over age 65 fall into poverty.
Do you see this getting worse with more and more baby boomers getting toward retirement age?
It's an absolute concern. It's a concern about baby boomers, but it's even more of a concern for the generations coming forward. You know, as typically as we know, individuals are living longer in retirement, and we're projecting that those improvements will continue for future generations. We know that younger people will have even more challenges, but the baby boom itself is going to be challenged, because particularly the baby boom generation has not saved to the extent that retirees today have saved. So we know, for example, since the last 10 years, we've had savings rates well below the savings rates that our parents and grandparents had, where they were saving about 10% of income as a general rule. Many mm-hmm. people today have only saved 2 or 3%. And in fact, a couple of years ago, the personal savings rate was negative.
Well, we appreciate your insights and on your study, and thank you so much, Diane Oakley, Executive Director of the National Institute on Retirement Security. Well, it was a very big weekend for movies across the United States, including the long-awaited Star Trek Beyond. Vegas film critic Jeffrey K. Howard joins me now with reviews. Hi, Jeff. How was Star Trek Beyond? Did it live up to the hype?
Well, you know, I'm a huge Star Trek fan, and it's so funny. I'm a Star Wars fan, too, and I was a little boy. Star Wars came first, because you have to have a certain kind of maturity to understand Star Trek, because it's based in scientific fact, you know, all scientific principles, and also the metaphors, you know, about unity and boldly going where man has gone before, like Gene Roddenberry wanted. So, and I love what J.J. Abrams has done with these last couple of movies, because he's really captured the spirit of Star Trek. And if you're a fan, you know what I'm talking about. And this latest edition, Star Trek Beyond, does exactly that. It's a glorified episode. And I say that, you know, with all excitement and respect to the original series. And we have the Enterprise that crashes on this planet, and this alien race is bent on destroying the Federation with this ancient weapon. And the main villain is named Krall, and it's Idris Elba, and he's this lizard-like creature. And that's what's really cool also about this new Star Trek edition, is that they go back to the basics. So I know there's a lot of CGI in the movie, but they also go back to the real makeup effects like they did in the olden days. So you see these creatures walking around the ship and on this planet. It's not a special effect. That's the real makeup. And they also pair up all of our characters. They have to abandon ship, and you have Kirk and Chekhov together, and you have Bones and Spock together. So you have all your favorite characters paired up. There's humor, there's excitement, and at times, it's just really great to see the franchise back for the 50th anniversary. I love it. It's one of my favorite movies of the summer, if not one of my favorite movies this year.
Wow.
Is that an endorsement or what?
That's a big that is a big endorsement. And there's another movie out that just came out that you saw, a horror that I definitely would be afraid to see, Lights Out.
Well, I was one of those kids that was afraid of the dark. I had the nightlight. I thought something was underneath the bed that was going to get me if I moved out of my covers. And, you know, and that's what this movie plays on. Lights Out plays on, because there's this entity that can only exist in the dark. So if you turn on a light switch, it disappears. If it's in the light anywhere in the house or anywhere it's existing, it won't come out. So that's what it plays on. And the movie, there's a lot of light switching going off and on because you see the creature and then you turn off the light, you know, off and on. So it's always like playing with you, you know, on your senses. And this was an internet movie. This was on YouTube and on the net for like a 4-minute short film from the director. And James Wan, who produced, you know, The Conjuring and all those popular films, he saw this film and went to the filmmaker and says, I want you to make a full-length version of this. The movie opened $30, $40 million, and it only cost $5 million. So this has a tremendous return. It's PG-13, so younger kids can go see it. It's not a gory film. It just plays on your fears of this creature that lives in the night that's terrorizing his family.
Okay. And then we've got there's also one, a new Woody Allen film, a drama, Cafe Society.
It is, Cafe Society. And this is what I love about Woody Allen. He's always giving you something different. This is a throwback to the 1930s in Hollywood, and you have just the classic movie setting. You have a young man from New York who's trying to come to Hollywood to make it big in movies, Jesse Eisenberg. And he's there with Steve Carell, who's his uncle who runs the talent agency. About the classic Hollywood movies and how life was in L.A. and New York in the 1930s. It's got classic soundtrack and the costumes. It's a romantic comedy. It also has Blake Lively, you know, as the love interest. So it's just a tremendous, tremendous Woody Allen surprise.
All right. Well, thanks so much, Jeffrey K. Howard. You can find his full video reviews at VegasFilmCritic.com.
News happens around the clock. And VOA brings you the latest at the top of each hour.
This is Joe Palca.
I'm Victor Beatty.
Francis Alonso.
Tune in for a summary of the news at the top of each hour, around the clock on The Voice of America. Hourly newscasts on the radio and on the internet at voanews.com. VOA, a leader in news coverage for over 70 years.
You've been listening to International Edition. We are glad you could join us. Find us anytime at voanews.com. You can follow us on Twitter at @VOA_IE. We appreciate you being here, and we appreciate our director, Tracy Carter, and thanks to our engineer, Jonah Cummings. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have yourself a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The International Campaign for Human Rights in Iran has reported that Giti Purfasel, a human rights lawyer who defended political prisoners and their families in Iran for a decade, has submitted her resignation to Iran's Bar Association and given up her law practice. Ms. Purfasel told the campaign she did so because of the constant harassment she received from Iranian authorities. Among Ms. Purfasel's clients were imprisoned Shiite cleric Ayatollah Hossein Kazemini Borujerdi, an advocate for the separation of religion from politics, the family of blogger Sattar Beheshti, who was beaten to death in police custody, and Kurdish-Iranian human rights defender Mohammad Sadiq Kaboudvand. Referring to the persistent threats and pressure she received from Iran's intelligence ministry, Ms. Purfasel said, "In this society, lawyers who bear witness to injustice and speak the truth get punished." The State Department's most recent report on human rights in Iran adds credence to her statement. The report notes, for example, the periodic jailing of political activist and lawyer Nasrin Sotoudeh, the imprisonment of lawyers and others affiliated with the Defender of Human Rights Center advocacy group, such as Abdul Fattah Soltani, who was serving a 13-year sentence for the alleged crime of colluding and conspiring against national security, and the 9-year prison term being served by center founder and human rights attorney Mohammad Ali Dadkha, purportedly for plotting a soft revolution and propaganda against the system. Those who defend the legal rights of others help safeguard the rule of law and make up a critical component of a nation's civil society. And, as President Barack Obama has emphasized, a healthy civil society is essential to a nation's success.
Civil society is the conscience of our countries. It's the catalyst of change. It's why strong nations don't fear active citizens.
The United States urges Iran, as it does all countries, to stop the harassment of lawyers and human rights defenders, release those who are currently in detention for their work, and recognize their crucial role in a healthy and just society.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
It's 4 hours, universe.